his relatives. You have to understand that these people had many wives, and as is the way with many wives, so then you have a lot of children. Well, let's put it this way, they had a lot of middle children. And they had to keep the lid on somehow. So just as in Saudi Arabia, which has 2,000 princes, all descended from Abdul Ibn Aziz, the late King Ibn Saud. So he's got 2,000 princes. So everybody's got to have his Ferrari. And everybody's got to have his little oil well. Because, I mean, it's your brother. So what he did was he parceled out the country to children, to uncles, to nephews, to people whom he owned favors to people who did great things on behalf of the sheikh, on behalf of the caliph, on behalf of the king, and he wanted to reward them. So this person he gave Cordova to, and this person he gave Toledo to, and this person he gave Cadiz, and this person had Seville, and this person was in Granada. So that within 50 years of the Muslim invasion of Spain, Spain was made up literally of hundreds of little pieces. And the hundreds of little pieces, each piece had its own owner, its own little dictator. So you can well imagine that in some places the people who owned it were nice and generous and wise and kind, and in some places, you know, it's you had people that were unworthy of any type of leadership. And the Jews, therefore, were at the mercy not of one central caliph, of one central government, but they were at the mercy of all of these differing princes, differing noblemen, and the allegiances were not long-lasting. That's another thing among the Bedouins, among the Arabs. I mean, you can be certain that today's enemy, tomorrow they're going to turn around and kiss each other. And those they're kissing today, tomorrow they'll turn around and assassinate. We have seen that in our time over the last 30 years occur and reoccur over and over again. It's the way of doing business. And the Jews learned how to do business that way. And the way they did it was that they usually covered their bets. They supported the man that was in power, and they supported those that were trying to get him out of power. So that you always had Jews on every side of every political, economic issue. Now, that caused, on one hand, a great deal of anti-Semitism, because it means that your opponent always had Jews helping him. But on the other hand, it also helped guarantee Jewish survival and success in the Golden Age of Spain, because he always had Jews on the side of the winner. So then it became the question of which Jew, or which group of Jews would triumph. Now, if you'll think about this for a minute, you will see that this naturally fractured the Jewish community as well. The divisions in the general community, the divisions we like to think of the Jewish people in Spain or in Eastern Europe or in any historic period as being a monolithic group, the Jews. But just as we live today, except for the holy city of Muncie, we know there's no such thing as the Jews united together. There are all kinds of Jews. And there are all kinds of shifting allegiances and loyalties, most of which have nothing to do with Judaism. We have people that work for IBM, and we have people that work for Data General. Well, in the ancient world, that was war. In our world, that, you know, we understand that there can be economic competition, etc. But in the ancient world, so if the Caliph of Seville had Jewish advisors and the Prince of Cordova had Jewish advisors, the Jews in Cordova and the Jews in Seville were on opposite sides of the fence. Sometimes the rivalry was so intense, or the stakes were so high, or the problems were of such an enormous nature, that if a Jew